Hey, book lovers, if you're a longtime listener of the podcast, you may want to listen up because we've got a couple of new things to tell you about Libro.fm. And if you're new here, we want you to know that Libro.fm is the best place to buy your audiobooks because it allows you to buy from your favorite local and independent bookstore. You can choose from more than 150,000 audiobook titles and get recommendations from booksellers around the country, all for the same price as that other company. You know which one I'm talking about. Except with Libro.fm, you'll be part of a different story, one that supports community. And now, just in time for the holidays, we wanted to let you know that you can also give audiobook memberships to the book lovers in your life. They come in 3, 6, and 12-month durations. Recipients will receive all of their audiobook credits up front, so no waiting each month for a new book. And they will also receive 30% off all additional purchases during the course of their membership. You can check out the link in our show notes for this deal. And as always, listeners of the Bookstore Podcast can get 2 months for the price of one when they use our new promo code, BookstorePod, all one word. That's a new promo code. Don't use the old one. At checkout at Libro.fm. That's Libro.fm. With each listen, take pride in knowing you're supporting local bookstores.
Welcome to the bookstore.
It's like a book club, but we actually read the book.
I'm Becca.
And I'm Corinne. This week, we are interrupting our year of mostly no mini episodes to bring you something super special to Becca and I. This week, we have had the opportunity to interview Bobby Finger, who is the author of the new novel, The Old Place. And Bobby is somebody that we have read and listened to on his podcast, Who Weekly, for many years. And so we're so excited to talk to him. Becca, do you have anything to say?
I will just say that this episode is coming out September 20th, which would be today if you're listening to it, same day. And that is the same day that The Old Place, Bobby Finger's novel, will be published. So I can't tell you to pre-order it, but I can tell you to go buy it today if you haven't already.
We have both read the book. We both really liked it. It's very sweet and big-hearted, but I guess sweet's also kind of the wrong word because the characters are all their own conflicted selves, very real to life. But it is a great book that tells a sort of realistic look at what it's like to be in a small town, from a small town to arrive in a small town.
So before we get into the interview, I'm just going to read a summary of The Old Place from the front flap. For the first time in nearly four decades, Mary Alice Roth is not getting ready for the first day of school at Billington High. A few months into her retirement, or district-mandated exile, as she calls it, Mary Alice does not know how to fill her days. At least there's Ellie, who stops by each morning for coffee and whose reemergence in Mary Alice's life is the one thing soothing the sting of retirement. Mary Alice and Ellie were a pair since the day Ellie moved in next door 18 years ago. That they were both single mothers, Mary Alice widowed, Ellie divorced, with sons the same age, was a pleasant coincidence. That they both lost the boys, one right after the other, was a tragedy. Years later, the two are finally working their way back to a comfortable friendship. But when Mary Alice's sister arrives on her doorstep with a staggering piece of news, it jeopardizes the careful shell Mary Alice has built around her life. The whole of her friendship with Ellie is put at risk, the fabric of a place as steadfast as Billington is questioned, and the unflappable, knotty fixture that is Mary Alice Ross might have to change after all. Okay, so we're just going to go ahead and get into the interview now. Today we have a special guest. This is a person whose work Corinne and I first read on Jezebel, then we quickly became hooligans, that is, fans of the celebrity podcast that he co-hosts and co-created with Lindsay Weber. As soon as his debut novel, The Old Place, published by G.P. Putnam Sons on September 20th, was announced, Corinne texted me that we should read it for the podcast. So we are very excited to talk to him today. And the person I'm talking about is, of course, Bobby Finger. Bobby, what do you want people to know about The Old Place?
Oh, I'm so intimidated. You're my most intimidating reader. Oh my goodness.
And
I'm
so,
no, that's two hooligans. It's, you know, I feel like it's a,
we probably should have said we love the book.
Yes, I'm glad you did. So. Thank you for reading it. What do I want people to know about it? What I want the hooligans to know about it is that it's nothing like the podcast. We've got no overlap there. And I guess what I want everyone else to know about it is that it's just a novel about two best friends in a small town, and secrets, and it's queer, and it's hopefully very heartwarming, and hopefully gives you a perspective of a small town that you don't see that often.
Yeah, we'll get to that in just a minute, because I did want to talk about that too. So, but first, can we start by asking you how the book was born? I know that in the acknowledgments you said you wrote it during COVID. Was this something that you've been wanting to do for a while and like COVID gave you the opportunity, or did being stuck in your house make you want to write about a place that was very different from where you were at the time?
Yes and no. I never, and I think that you'll like, as I've been like talking about this more to people, I've never had to do this before. But as I've been like talking about it more with people, I'm like noticing these obvious like parallels. Because the novel's not autobiographical, really. The place is real. I renamed it, but the town, I mean. But in terms of like the things that happen to these characters, they're not necessarily autobiographical. They're not based on real people. But as I was writing it, I came to realize that like it was an idea I always had. I wrote it as a screenplay first years and years ago, just because that's my preferred form of writing for myself when I just want to write something, you know, like my creative outlet for things that like I have no intention of people ever seeing or reading or whatever. And I realized during the pandemic that I could do this. I had it in my head that like, because I studied screenwriting in college and then advertising, and I guess sort of, I did a little bit of journalism. I worked at the newspaper in college for a little bit until that just became awful. And I kind of was under the assumption that I had made the decisions for myself already in terms of what I could do professionally. And, you know, I had a good job at Jezebel, and I was sort of like, well, why would I do anything else? And then I started the podcast, which is something I'd never done before. And I realized, you know, you could do other things. People can do different things and they can make them work. And during the pandemic, I kind of got the idea in my head, maybe I should finally turn this into a novel, because I know that it would be better as a longer, more fleshed out story. And the pandemic really did give me the excuse to finally start it. I think I probably would have eventually, but it may have taken a very, very, very long time. And over the process of writing it, I kind of realized that like, oh yeah, you can start again. You can kind of make a pivot in your career or in your life, even if you're happy with the one you have or unhappy with the one you have, you know, like it can always change or evolve, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People can do hard things.
I was trying so hard not to say that. I
told myself, please don't just fill this with tropes.
I was just, oh, I bet you could hear me biting my tongue. Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, I love what you said about the small town. I did grow up in a small town in Michigan, not in Texas. I've never been to Texas, but...
Oh, a Michigander.
One of the things that really struck me and I loved about the book is all of the small town details. The huge trucks everybody drives, especially when it's like the, you know, mothers and wives driving these trucks, the very strict potato salad recipe.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say warm potato salad is not great.
No.
But I, you know, how, I guess, I know you spent some time in a small town. Did you have to do it more research to get those details so well done and feel so realistic?
I didn't have to do research to get the details. The details of the people and the way that they behaved and the potato salad and the way you feel around your neighbors, that was all pretty vivid. The research came from, you know, learning about the full history of this town, how it got started, the kind of long, which I always knew, I guess, intellectually, like subconsciously, I knew that the people who lived in the town had been there for a long time, but really like researching the history of the town is something that I'd never really done. Fortunately, like my parents had plenty of books on that. And the internet had also plenty of information, but also I was learning things about San Antonio that I didn't know. And there's a scene in the novel, and I love San Antonio so much. The research that I think was so important to me were the little details about the actual facts that are presented as facts in the book, like the history of this town, the indigenous people who lived there before, though the immigrants who came in and settled there, how that settling process worked, like the way that they brought people in by offering them land that they had already bought, was fascinating to me. I didn't really know the full story there. And then in San Antonio, I was just really hoping to find, I wanted a scene in a gay bar in the 70s in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. And I knew, of course, some could exist, but I had never thought to look that up. And when I found San Antonio Country, which really existed in San Antonio, not only did it exist, not only was it popular, not only did it look absolutely perfect inside, like my ideal bar, but it was right in mm-hmm. the downtown space and mm-hmm. like around everything else. And that was just so surprising to me and really rewarding to me. And I just, it was nice to know that, like, as oppressive as things can feel sometimes, like the safe spaces are kind of hidden in plain sight, you know? And mm-hmm. so that was yeah. the research that was meaningful. That was the research that I did. But in terms of like the potato salad, no, like I remember the vats of yeah. potato salad and I remember.
That's just yes, lived experience. Oh,
yeah. That's right there. Top of mind.
Yeah. 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 Mary Alice. So I feel like we could just talk this whole time just about the character of Mary Alice. I think she's so complicated. She's so interesting. She's so rich as a person mm-hmm. that really there probably could have been just a book about her. But I love that you chose to flesh out all of the side characters, too. You gave them their own motivations, personality. Mm-hmm. Did you know from the beginning you wanted to do this sort of ensemble cast?
No, I knew I wanted the characters there. I knew who all the people were, but I didn't know that I would have so much fun fleshing them all out and expanding mm-hmm. all of their backstories. And like, especially even from the original manuscript to the final version that you read, like as a novel, what I loved about my editor, Gabby Mongelli at Putnam, was that when we first talked about the book, she just was attached to it instantly. First of all, she really seemed to get it. She didn't want to cut any main characters. And I had conversations mm-hmm. with people who like wanted to cut some characters and I understood what they wanted, but we just weren't on the same level. And Gabby was just like, I love this. And if anything, her major edits were that she wanted more. And mm-hmm. I loved that she wanted more and I was happy to give her more. And so I knew that these people were there, but it only made, as I fleshed out everyone else and I gave everyone else these backstories, it just made everyone else make sense. So it was just very satisfying to do that. And again, I said it started as a screenplay. There were much fewer characters and there was much less space for that sort of character development and those sorts of flashbacks that really helped explain people. And that's why I think that it works so much better as this novel than it ever possibly could as a movie. It just couldn't. They're just like, this story deserves, I think, as much space as possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the book feels like it's just full of just like heart. And I really appreciate the care and kind of tenderness shown in the details with all of those characters and their mm-hmm. complications. Like Becca, I also grew up in a small town and I moved to a slightly bigger city, like mm-hmm. not very yeah. far away. So sometimes I feel like embarrassed about that fact because the best, coolest thing you can do is get so far away. So I think it's really easy to write small town people as like simple mm-hmm. or kind of pathetic, but you don't do that. It, like, was that a conscious decision to give characters like so much depth that isn't normal or not something we normally see from small yeah, communities?
It was one of the most like conscious decisions. And I was going back to authors who write small towns, fictional small towns so well and without any condescension and just filled with respect, and like Kent Hariff, the Plain Song author, his mm-hmm. little town in Colorado, and like mm-hmm. the Jesmyn Ward's little small town in Mississippi that she wrote, mm-hmm. like there's nothing yeah. it's so respectful. And so I know that this exists, and reminding myself that that this can exist very well was crucial. And I knew that my family would be reading it, and I knew that probably people in the town would get a copy, maybe from my parents, they'd find out about it. And so I definitely wanted to be as respectful as possible. And because, like you, I'm so glad you said that you used to be like ashamed of being from a small town, because that is absolutely like a place that this novel came from, me working through that. Because I used to feel the exact same way when we moved to San Antonio. I didn't want anyone to know where I was from. I didn't want anyone to make weird judgments about me, this new person who was already having a hard time getting to know people and make friends. Just because I was from a small town, I didn't want to be like cast out. So I just like kept it close to my chest. I didn't want anyone to know. I didn't necessarily lie, but I didn't tell the truth, which is mm-hmm. something that a lot of the characters in this novel deal with, that sort of like lying by omission and how it can be just as damaging. So I wanted to work out the way that I feel about this town. And throughout the process, I feel like I have to respect this place that I'm from. It's like, it is where I'm from. And you know what? It's a perfectly valid, that's a stupid word, but it is, because I used to feel like it was invalid, like a perfectly valid place to be from, that is worthy of maybe not love. Maybe you could go there and hate it. I'm sure plenty of people do, mm-hmm. but it's like, it is a fact of my life, and it is a fact of a lot of people's lives. And so that's why the novel has people who live there for a long time and never leave, who live there and leave early, who live and die there, who leave and then come back. Like, I wanted to explore all the variations of like life in a small town and how your relationship to the small town evolves.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that, you know, too, with Josie, the character of Josie, mm-hmm. she, you know, moves to a place she's never been. And I know authors don't necessarily like to be told they should write a sequel, but mm-hmm. I will just say I would love to know more about Josie.
I would too. And I mentioned the authors who have these books, and there's, what's his name? A friend of mine read this, oh my God, I just read all of his books and I cannot remember his name. Oh, James Wilcox. Tula Springs, Louisiana is his fictional small town that he writes all mm-hmm. these novels mm-hmm. in. And a friend of mine had said, have you ever heard of this guy? And I said, no. And he said, I think you really like him. And I'd never really, despite the fact that I'd read plenty of authors who wrote multiple novels set in the same place, even when the characters don't necessarily overlap, there's just like a stray mention here or there, you know, of this neighbor. I'd never considered it until after finishing this. And now I'm just like, wow, that I do want to go back here. You know, I do want to know more about Josie, and I do want to know more about her son. And I do want to know more about maybe the principal, you know, what's his story? Mm-hmm. You know, I love the character of Maria too. Like, what's her deal with mm-hmm. her and her husband yeah. and her big truck? You know, yeah. she's barely in it, but it's funny that I never really considered it until after the fact.
Yeah.
Should we do one more question, Becca, or?
Sure. Yeah, we can do that. There's a lot of discussion like in the book world about likable versus unlikable characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally am on the side that it's more important how interesting a character is than whether I like them or not. And so I don't want to say Mary Alice is unlikable, but mm-hmm. she does some really hurtful things to people.
Yeah.
Was that sort of something you went in and you wanted to show, is that, I mean, to use a cliche, but like hurt people hurt people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I wanted that initially. I wanted her to be a very unpleasant person.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
I didn't want her to be as kind of nasty as she was at first, mm-hmm. but that came later in the edit. That was another. My editor was like, I think in those first chapters, she needs to be a little nastier. And she was like, fight back if you want to, we don't have to do that. But like, I think she'll make more sense if she's a little more awful to people, you know, like then, mm-hmm. then her, it's not really a redemption arc, but it sort of is a little more satisfying, but also she would be that nasty. Like if she is the person that I have created for her, she would be an unpleasant, mean person. It's the way that she's, and she does it intentionally. Like it is sort of her character, but not really. She's created these walls around herself and this hostility so that she doesn't get close to people, right? So that people don't mm-hmm. want to be close to her, because she has this history of kind of destroying the relationships, or incidentally, like these relationships with people that she's close with just end up being destroyed, and she doesn't want to go through that anymore. And the best way to do that is to keep people at arm's length. And an easy way, not the best way, but an easy way to keep people at arm's length is to be an asshole. And yeah. He learns that and she's like, and it works. And it works for a really long time until she's retired and she's like stuck alone with her thoughts and she can't be an authority figure anymore. And she can't be like king of the castle anymore. You know, like that's why it's all taking place like at this very, you know, consequential week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just got to say the way that everything is revealed and that all comes together at the end there is great. And I think it would be very easy to spoil this. So I'll just maybe leave it there. But the one thing I need to know, and this is so inconsequential, but I have to, and you know, death of the author and everything, whatever. But were you raised Catholic? Oh. Because in my experience, the only CCD kids, only CCD kids know that CCD exists. So I just have to know.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I was an altar boy.
Honestly. All right. Yeah. Because definitely, I don't think I've ever seen CCD mentioned ever in media at all. And I've listened to thousands of hours of podcasts. And I was like, oh, my gosh, was this that a secret CCD gift to like those of us who had to memorize the mysteries of the rosary after school? Okay. Yeah. All right. Uh-huh. Just had to know. Okay. We'll move on now to our quiz, which is completely different and it has nothing to do with your book. But you will be now joining the hordes of famous people, because you're famous to us, you're them to us, who have written books. This is who's and them's alike, who have all mostly written who books. I'm terrible at writing multiple choice questions, so I did the most insane thing I could think of, which was to take Daily Mail descriptions of the authors and then include descriptions of their novels, and then you've just got to use those clues to maybe tell us who the author is.
Okay. I'll do my best.
With the maybe the most unhinged one. The How I Met Your Father's Stars novel about a talented photojournalist whose father disappears while on humanitarian mission was published just over 10 years before she revealed to fans that her one-year-old daughter May contracted hand, foot, and mouth disease. So in this one, your clues are really just How I Met
Is
Your Father
star Hillary
and
Duff?
Her daughter's name is May.
Did Hillary Duff write a book?
She wrote three books, and I should say she maybe outlined a couple books and had a ghostwriter.
Oh yeah,
The first one is called Elixir, which I have no idea how that has anything to do with a photo.
Are they like YA?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. This is when I was working at the bookstore. I was the manager of the kids and like young adult section, and this was like an explosion of. After Twilight, young adult isn't just for young adults anymore. So they just started like pushing out these who related ghostwritten novels. So very good. You got your first one, Hillary Duff.
All right. Second one. The 5'10" beauty once said in a Good Morning America interview that she and her sister had some help writing their novel, Rebels, City of Indra, the story of Lex and Livia. Because we obviously can't write a sci-fi novel on our own, and sported an off-duty model look wearing a sleeveless black top tucked into a flouncy black maxi skirt. I'm sure you already know that.
That is radical honesty from either Kylie or Kendall Jenner.
Yes,
that is Kendall Jenner. That's an incredible. I should have gone and looked up the interview because it sounds like it would be stunning. Great title for that book too. Our next one. The reality star turned entrepreneur insisted she and husband William Tell are at capacity in their household of only two sons, Liam 4 and Charlie 2, and that they, quote, feel good about the three-book L.A. Candy series about two friends approached by a producer who wants them to be on his new reality version of Sex and the City.
I only know two William Tells, and and only one of them could be married to someone who was in this quiz. Is it Lauren Conrad?
Yes,
it is. Yes. She also wrote a series of three books, which just unbelievable to me.
I mean, like you said, they're... She put her name on a book.
Yeah, exactly.
The Runway Veteran 48 has been working on a project for more than a decade. It is named after the semi-autobiographical young adult novel she penned in 2010, in which Tookie Delacreme, the world's most unlikely intoxabella, must survive the catwalk corridor, the thigh-high boot camp, and learn to tell time in colors.
Is that Tyra Banks?
She is.
Okay.
Unfortunately,
yes. That's Modeland,
is
isn't it?
Print. Yes.
Okay.
It is. It is out of print. If you can get your hands on it, absolutely read it. We read it for the podcast once, and it is, I don't know how to describe that, like, it's bad, but like very, very good at the same time. It's insane.
I should really read it, because it's been such a punchline for so long, but I've never picked it up.
Yeah. It's like if a writer's room took every single note, suggestion, pitch, whatever, and then fit it into a manuscript, but like all of them were pitched by Tyra Banks. So it's nuts. I think we maybe have time for two more. So, our next one. It comes after the model and former Disney star confessed that despite being the author of the Autumn Falls trilogy, which follows the aptly named Autumn Falls, a redheaded total klutz as she navigates being a new girl outsider at school, that she still has no idea how to use an iron.
Autumn Falls is ringing a bell, and I cannot. I know I'm going to kick myself. Is it like, I don't know, like Leighton Meester?
She's an OG who, a good
oh,
form.
It's Bella Thorne. Okay, yes. Okay, it's Bella
it
Thorne.
Is.
Oh my God, it's Bella Thorne.
I couldn't believe it. She wrote three books too, somehow. She was really doing everything at like the age of 17.
I bought one of those books once because we gave it as a prize to someone at a live show. But
that's
I never
amazing.
Read it. I never read it.
That's perfect. It sounds kind of like most of those. Exactly the same books.
Okay.
But yeah,
good for her.
Good for her.
All right, last one. Yeah. The House of Harlow 1960 creative director's hair caught fire as she blew out the candles on her 40th birthday cake on Monday night. It happened after Baby to Baby co-CEO Kelly Sawyer placed the confection featuring a glamour shot of the star's 2005 semi-autobiographical novel about a 7-year-old girl who was adopted by a music superstar and his wife in front of her as the group sang Happy Birthday.
I can only name two celebrities whose hair caught fire, and I think that's Michael Jackson and Nicole Richie.
Yes.
All right.
Fantastic.
We talked about
you
that on the, when we talked about
star.
It on the show, I remember it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It was wild trying to go through the Daily Mail stuff because, especially for Bella Thorne, there's probably 45 different articles that are just about an outfit she wears, but then the same copy about her breakup with this boyfriend she just had. So I have a whole new appreciation for you and Lindsay and Timmy, everybody. I don't know how you read through those and manage to write a novel. So... Outstanding. Well done. I think you got, five out of six, but we're going to call it
all
a perfect
right.
score.
Thank you.
So
thanks.
Great job. And then our final question, which is going to be, is there anything that you have read recently that you just have to recommend? And then maybe your choice of bookstore where you would purchase it.
Oh, yes. I'll give one, a novel and a memoir, but I'll give the novel because I loved it so much. And it's also Texas. I just read Parish by Latoya Watkins, which is another small town Texas novel about a family. And it's about secrets. It's devastating, but it's like it's really stunning. It's amazing. I love novels about Texas and novels about families and novels about family secrets. And it's just a really, really like beautiful and wise novel, Parish. And I would buy it at Books or Magic if you want to in Brooklyn. Yeah.
All right. All right. So where can everybody find you?
find me online. I mean, they can find me at the coffee store. They can find me at the Java shop. They could find me online. On Twitter is where I've recently had to become a little more active. At Bobby Finger on Twitter. I'm also on Instagram, but I'm not really posting up much of a storm there. So yeah, Twitter at Bobby Finger.
No, mostly. If you're not listening to Who Weekly, you should be, if only so you can understand the jokes that I
wherever
tell.
You get your podcasts.
yes. Well, Bobby, thank you so much. It was honestly
thank
an honor
so,
to have
thank you.
You
thank you so much thank for reading you. It and for asking me to be on here.
And congratulations on your novel. We hope you enjoy this time.
I'm trying. So, thanks for making it easy. Bye.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
Great. Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Bookstore. The Old Place by Bobby Finger is available now at your local bookstore or library.
Pick that up. We will be doing a discussion episode about it because I had already chosen it for the December prompt, which is to read a book published in 2022. So you can get way ahead of that and then listen to our discussion in December. We hope you enjoy the book. And again, thank you to Bobby Finger and to Ariane Moore at GP Putnam Sons and Penguin Random House for setting this up. And thank you, the listener, for listening. We probably already said that, though. If you're interested in getting a hold of us, you can check out all of those avenues at thebookstorepodcast.com.
Our next book discussion will be Ilatsoe by Darcy Little Badger. This is part of our September prompt for reading a YA or banned book. You can find that also at your local bookstore or library and read along with us.
The Bookstore is a production of Awkwardly Social Media, produced by Becca Young and Corinne Keener, with technical and production support and emotional support provided by Josh Boudin and Zach Titus.
And John, if you're out there, thanks for listening.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye. His new, like, favorite thing, well, no, actually, his all-time favorite thing all of the time is going to the bar and just trying to, like, rip things out of it. So I had to move all the wine glasses and stuff.